Did you know your calendar age doesn't always match how old your body truly is? I just took the True Age test from True Diagnostic, and I will soon discover my biological age. Biological age is a powerful indicator of how fast you're aging internally, which directly predicts your risk for serious diseases. Here's why that matters. Research shows that if your biological age is even just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease can jump by as much as 30 to 50%. That's a big deal and it's completely avoidable. The good news is nearly 90% of biological aging is in your hands. It's driven by things like your lifestyle, your habits, and the environment you're in, which means you have a lot of control over it. This morning, I took the True Age test. It was easy. I answered a few questions on my phone, watched a video that showed me how to perform the test, pricked my finger. I didn't even feel the prick, to be honest. Provided a sample, then dropped the sample in a mailbox. It's a prepaid envelope, so I didn't even need to go to the post office. In about 2 to 3 weeks, I'll get a detailed online report about my aging and health, fast and hassle-free. If you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use our code BA2022 to get 20% off of your entire order subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use BA2022 at checkout to get 20% off your order. Your future self will thank you.
2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me, riding shotgun again, Dylan White. He is back from his vacation. I said you were up in the Yukon. That's what I said last week. I don't even know that thing you do. But you're out in your cabin. You're out in the lake. I got a picture of you and the dog in the lake. You know, you were out there chilling. So how'd that go, man? Get some time to unwind, just check your fantasy teams and nothing else?
Yeah, very well. It went very well. We were on a lake. It's a friend of a friend's cottage. Got a good deal on it. We went there last year too. Stand up paddle boarding the dog. We put the life jacket on him. The dachshund wiener dog. He just sits on the bow of the thing and just like... like pulls his own Titanic move, and just so it was very good, very relaxing. The weather was good, wasn't so hot, there were no bugs really either. It was just everything worked out very well. But I'm still on vacation this week too. I'm a staycation now. I'm back in Toronto, but not working, so
back in the six doing his thing. Speaking of Canadians, speaking of Toronto, big day on Friday for you and your countrymen as national hero Jonah Tong. It's making his MLB debut. That's very likely soon to be minor league pitcher of the year, Jonah Tong, especially if he doesn't make another minor league start. It's kind of hard to argue with the numbers at this point, the performance across the two highest levels of the minors. Obviously, a very limited AAA sample, but in those 11.2 innings, he was tremendous. Didn't give up a run. You know, he does look ready. Huge stuff. I know he's been a fan of yours for a while. The Robo Scout was a fan of him. I had him in my 20 prospects that could break out. I think that's probably my best call like to date over 3 or 4 years or whatever, or writing these. Peyton Tolley was in that one too. So I hit a couple of homers this year. But I love Tong. He's a great kid. You know, I wrote an article back in May. I've had some opportunities to talk to him 3 different times now, once in person for a bit at the prospect pad. And he's just really, really down to earth, very Canadian. He's very polite, very mild mannered, you know. And it's funny because he's kind of so unassuming, like physically and just like in his personality. You'd never think that he was this, you know, tremendous athlete and, you know, potentially, you know, soon to be, you know, major league star. We'll see how it goes. The strikeout numbers are phenomenal. We know the changeup changed this year. He went to more of a Vulcan grip on top of the horseshoe. That's allowed him to play off the fastball a little bit more, kind of moves almost a little bit like a splitter. And he's got that great fastball, tons of ride. Last year, it was the slider that was his best secondary. He'll still flash a plus slider. And I talked to a few scouts kind of, you know, around him over the last couple of weeks. Leading up to this and just, you know, kind of getting a temperature check. And, you know, I think it was getting more positive. And one of the things I heard was, you know, there was like a 55-60 breaking ball, like slider there last year. I kind of wonder if that comes back a little bit, they can recapture that a little bit. and not sort of, you know, in any way sort of compromise the shape of the changeup or of the four-seam fastball, which are both very good. I don't look at him as a two-pitch pitcher, though he is heavily reliant on those two pitches. You know, he does have a curveball that's more of a strike stealer, like a lot of curveballs are, but he knows when to use it. You know, I think if you're going in there just expecting to see like a two-pitch guy like we're used to with these, you know, four-seam slider types, I don't think you're necessarily going to see that. I think you're going to see some variations, and it would be interesting to see if the breaking ball usage, depending on start to start, maybe goes up a little bit. So I ran a little long there, but I'm going to hand it over to you, Dylan. What are your thoughts on Jonah Tong?
Yeah, he lives just up the road. Well, I guess, I don't know if he lives there now, but Markham, I think, which is one of the suburbs of Toronto. So, you know, maybe I'll bump into him while I'm walking the dog. Yeah, I mean, you've said it all. We have so many articles on his arsenal and everything he does. Robusca loves him. He's the number one pitcher. If you take his AAA and AA performance and you kind of extrapolate it out to his major league peaks, I've got a 1.07 whip and a 2.94 ERA. So a sub 3 ERA, 31% strikeout rate. So yeah, that's a best pitcher in the minor leagues. That's even better than Chase Burns, who was also like, it's basically Burns and Tong are the top two per Robusca this year with their domination, their strikeouts and all that stuff. And the thing with Tong is he has the sort of a high ground ball rate too. He projects to have like an over 50% ground ball rate. So he's going to keep it in the park. Hopefully all that is good for the model. Strikeouts, walks and ground balls are, you know, feed into it. And the stuff, like you said, is great. Last year, I was looking at his pitch mix last year. He threw, so like we have like 1,000 fastballs and then he threw 560 curves and sliders and his changeup, he only threw 172 times. So that's like 10% of the time he throws the fastball. And then this year in AAA, if you look at his mix, I talked about it in the RoboScout article, he's thrown the changeup 31% of the time and the fastball 55% of the time, and the slider and curve only combined are like 12%, 13%. So he seems to be going with the changeup as his primary secondary. Yeah, everything's like the fastball's increased 3 miles an hour. It's like everything's looking up. Yeah, and I can't wait to see him pitch on Friday.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting. I'm going to pivot a little bit here. Nolan McClain was called up since we last did a podcast together. He's been phenomenal. I don't know if you got to see his start or kind of get up to date on what some of the numbers are. But, you know, he went out again tonight, and this is Wednesday night when we're recording, and spun another gem, man. I don't know if you've been able to keep up with the Nolan McClain performances, you know, during your time off.
I saw today he pitched. It's like there are like two Mets pitchers who had in their first three starts, like 300 runs and 18 strikeouts. And it's like him and Tom Seaver, something like that. Yeah. I mean, Robusca likes him. The stuff's great. Like I talked about it before, his curveball is like probably one of the best in the minors. It's got like 3000 RPM and has a whole bunch of horizontal movement. It's kind of like on par with like Ryan Pressly, who has like one of the best curveballs per stuff plus in the majors. Phil Maton, same thing. So the curveball is great. He throws the fastball quite well as well. I guess the issue is command, which he doesn't seem to be showing any issues right now. But he has good strikeouts, gets ground balls, great stuff. And then, go ahead.
I think it actually kind of lines up well with a general conversation that, you know, I sort of have when we're talking about pitchers that are called up from AAA. They're dealing with the challenge system. And so there is still an automated strike zone. And, you know, the margin of error is much smaller. The umpires are calling to that sort of smaller zone. And JJ actually, you know, our colleague and my boss, did a great article kind of digging into this, and I had said it to him for a while, and then he was able to prove it out that, you know, the AAA zone is in fact tighter than the major league zone. which is sort of remarkable. So I do think that some of these pitchers come up and, you know, it's maybe kind of a sigh of relief because they're getting a bigger zone. They don't have to worry about challenges and a bad call. And three or four calls a game can really make a big difference in terms of, like, you know, how your command looks, how your control looks, just getting out of particular situations and at bats, et cetera. But yeah, McLain is really, really interesting. And, you know, he's already kind of come out here and, you know, shown, you know, he's got a deep arsenal. He's got, you know, excellent feel for spin, you know, as you had mentioned. But he also mixes like two pretty decent fastball shapes. Like, he doesn't really ride the heck out of his four seam fastball, but, you know, you'll see a 17 IVB, a 16 IVB, 15 pretty consistently. He gets some arm side run on that. He's got a true sinker where if you look at the vertical break on that, it's like 0-1. Like, it's legitimately, you know, a real deal sinker. I think that term sometimes gets kind of thrown around for two seam fastballs that don't have true sink, where, you know, McLain does have true sink, and that makes him, you know, really, really unique. Of course, he's got, you know, that super high spin curveball. It's got a lot of movement. He throws it pretty hard for the amount of movement that it has. You know, the sweeper, which is kind of his signature pitch, you know, he'll get that thing up to 88 miles an hour with 3,100 RPMs of of spin. And up to 21 inches of horizontal break. Now, that's not all on the same pitch. That would be the greatest pitch maybe ever thrown if it was 88 miles an hour, 21 inches of horizontal break and 3,100 RPMs. But it's possible because he does all those things. It's just such a really interesting pitch mix. And, you know, Market posed this question to me the other day, and I think the answer is probably Senga or maybe David Peterson, but I think the way he's pitching down the stretch here, if he keeps this up and the Mets make the playoffs, and, you know, you're in a longer series, I think he has to start game one. Like, I'm kind of looking at this guy as my playoff ace. Cause there's nobody on this Mets staff right now that is pitching as well, as McLain is. I guess Tong has a chance to, but yeah, I don't know. McLain continues to be, one of the players that I'm most interested in potentially drafting next year as well. I was going to say, why don't we look forward a little bit with McLain? It's obviously a very small sample size, but how do you compare him in terms of where he should go in the draft versus a couple of other outstanding rookies with good stuff in Jacob Mizorowski and Chase Burns?
I think I got Burns and Mizorowski, depending on how Burns recovers from this flexor strain, sprain, whatever it is. I think I still have them ahead of McLain. So right now, looking at my RoboScout, McLain's peak projection, 1.2 whip, 3.7 ERA. And then, like, this year, RoboScout says 1.3 whip and a 3.95 ERA. So a bit of a tear down. That's just purely on the minor league stats, not based on what he's doing in the majors right now. I think I was curious. Jeff Zimmerman made a point that the release heights of his pitches are all different. Like, the curve is like 3 inches, or slider 3 inches lower than the, maybe that's not right, but it was not a consistent release height. So I was worried how that would manifest. I think it was before his first start. Zimmerman posted that, but apparently it's not causing an issue. But yeah, I think I have McLain would be fourth of Tong, Burns, Mizorowski, Nolan McLain. I like the K's of all the other guys.
Yeah.
Much more. Well, not much more, but more than the others. And if you take his peak projection and you kind of, like, I did some like correlations with like the Dynasty 500 and where his peak his fantasy dollar value is, and then how that would kind of correlate and interpolate, he's kind of like 250th, and that was before he even made his major league debut. So his he's definitely an asset, a long-term dynasty asset. And like you said, he's going to be a redraft guy to take next year. I think he's just behind those guys, but it seems like you don't agree.
I have to see what happens with Tong in the big leagues. I have a feeling that he could end up being one. I think it's Mizorowski, obviously, right now. I do love the stuff. I love, you know, the setup with the Brewers. The K's are there. We've seen it more consistently than what we've seen thus far with Burns. The thing with McLain is because of his ability to throw this true sinker, mm-hmm. he's going to get deeper into starts. So depending upon your format, I think that if you're not looking at it strictly from a K per nine perspective, but more in terms of like accumulation over the course of a season, he might be able to go deeper into starts more consistently than these other guys and maybe make up and accumulate some of those numbers while, you know, having, you know, some of these out generation skills besides just striking guys out by being able to get those ground balls and show a different variation of pitches, et cetera, maybe even ride a four seamer when he needs a pop up, et cetera. Yeah. And I think the other thing that I don't want to underrate with McLain here is this is only his second full season pitching. And actually, did he hit a little bit last year too? This might actually be his first full season where he didn't hit at all in his entire life. And before that, he was playing football too, because he did, you know, was a double scholarship guy. So there's a lot going on there that he is kind of this extraordinary athlete. And we've seen such gains in a small window that he's having success in the big leagues. And it kind of makes me wonder if there's like an aptitude component here that we can't fully sort of bake in. I said it before he was drafted. The one thing with Burns that always concerns me is I think that his fastball gets hit hard. Andrew Painter has the same issue too. And I think a lot of it is because it's not a very deceptive like arm action. He doesn't hide the ball real well. McLain does that, as does Tong. That's the big thing with Tong, is Tong gets great movement. He really hides the ball well because he gets great extension. He gets really deep into his glutes. And if you see how the ball sort of swings by, I know I'm like showing you right now while I'm out there, people can hear this, but like kind of gets back behind it. And like, you know, as he strides forward, that's when it comes up and it kind of explodes on you. And it's like that shoulder tilt that he has kind of makes it an over the top arm action. It's really, really unusual. So yeah, I try to factor all that in when I'm looking at this stuff and just kind of evaluate it. I don't want to fully write off McLain. I kind of want to put him at three, but it could be two, kind of pending what Jonah Tong looks like over the next month. Because this, I mean, just based on the numbers you spit out, what we've seen and the performance, at this point, this guy has checked every box, you know? And it's not like we haven't seen a young hard thrower come up and dominate with, you know, two very special pitches, Spencer Strider or Jared Jones in recent memory. So you don't have to go that far back, but yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting conversation here. Dylan, let's take a quick break. I want to call out a couple of Robo Scout standouts and some guys that you talked about, because we've got a big data update on here. So kind of adjusted some of the RoboCast numbers, but we're going to talk that when we come back. We're going to take a quick break. You can hear from our sponsors.
Kratz, if you need to pay rent for your apartment and you're not getting anything for it, then you probably haven't heard of Bilt.
You have to pay rent every single month. Why not get some points that you can redeem for other things that are a lot more fun than paying rent, like flights, hotels, Uber rides?
That's right. And it doesn't stop there. Bilt is about making your entire neighborhood more rewarding. You can dine at your favorite local restaurants, and you can earn additional points with VIP treatment at certain fitness studios. And you can also enjoy exclusive experiences that are just for Bilt members. They announce them every month. Bilt is turning a monthly expense into an opportunity to earn rewards and discover the best that your neighborhood has to offer. Your rent is finally working for you, and you can earn points on rent and around your neighborhood wherever you call home by going to joinbilt.com/foul. That's joinbilt.com/foul. Make sure to use our URL so they know that FT sent you. Get after it.
All right, and we are back. Jeff Ponce, Dylan White, Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. Dylan's back from his vacation, and he dropped his first RoboScout article quite a while. actually not quite a while, excuse me, updated RoboScout article was 2 weeks, right? So you did have 1 week off. So that is quite a while based on, you know, how the RoboScout typically comes out. we have some interesting names here. I won't go into any of the DSL guys right now. The first one that I wanted to ask you about, though, on the hitting side is Ralphie Velasquez. He's really had a tremendous month or two here in like the second half of the season. One of the top, you know, sort of surging hitters in the second half, I guess would probably be the best way to put it. The data is pretty good as well. What are your takeaways with Ralphie Velasquez? Because you wrote a nice little write-up on him on Sunday.
Yeah, he jumped up on everything, and I was very surprised to see that because he kind of been staying under the radar for most of the season. He wasn't having a great season, and like you said, he's very hot now. But just seeing all kind of the Statcast numbers that I look at, the barrel rate, chase and swing minus chase, and then his contact and in zone contact in the 90th percentile, all those things have increased from last year. And last year they were pretty good. His 90th percentile exit velocity last year was 105 miles an hour, which is very good for a 19-year-old. And then this year it's a 106. So, you know, taking a step forward, the contact was 73. It's now 76. The barrel rate was 60%. This year I regressed the barrel rate to the mean just so that you don't have like the small sample size things. And even regressed, it's 24%. Where average is 15%. So he's not only hitting it very hard, but he's hitting it at the right angles and doing a lot of damage. So like his, like what I call hit plus, is very good. It's like 129 adjusted for age, adjusted for the level, because he's at AA right now. So he, on RoboScout for AA, he's like a 68 on the 0 to 100 scale. But then when you throw in the Statcast, it's up to 75. So he jumps, significantly because of the Statcast.
Yeah, and he's been a bat first prospect, a really interesting hitter, dating back to, you know, his high school days at Huntington Beach. I don't think there's really a position, and that's kind of what the caveat is. So he's really got a hit. Just one organization that needs straight hitters. It's probably that one, especially a big power hitter, could be a difference maker. It'll be interesting to see how quickly he could potentially move next year, or if he's a guy that kind of spends some time at AA, AAA, and then we don't see him until 27. Still incredibly young, high school pick back in 2023. Let's move on to another young hitter here. We've talked a lot about, I think, in the offseason and throughout the season, because the performance has been great. He's really started to take off again in low A, and that's Ryanel Rodriguez, one of our favorites, Cardinals catcher. Talk to me a little bit about Rodriguez, because the underlying Statcast data, as I wrote about last week as well, is phenomenal.
Yeah, he was one of the top performers of the DSL last year, him, Made, even Florentino. Better stuff, better numbers than like Luis Pena. Last year, I was a bit lower on him just because he's a catcher, teenager catcher in the DSL. So, you know, there's going to be a lot, kind of a long stewing period. But, you know, as we've seen this year, he's crushed. I think he hit his 19th home run today. And just like Ralphie Velasquez, all his Statcast data has improved as well. So the contact still 76%, which is above average. Average is 72%. His 90th percentile exit velocity last year was 103, which is fantastic for a 17-year-old. And well, as an 18-year-old, it's 105.6. So that's higher than Luis Pena, higher than Eduardo Quintero, higher than Edward Florentino. It's pretty much one of the better ones you can have for an 18-year-old. His chase is a bit better than average. Last year was average, so it's slightly increased or improved. And then his barrel rate was 16% last year, where average was 12%. And now this year regressed, it's 22%. So he's just like I said with Ralphie Velasquez, very similar thing. He's crushing the ball and then he's also crushing it at the right angle. So he was one that I missed because I was being conservative for the fact he was a catcher. But now, you know, it looks like maybe he doesn't even have to catch. His bat's going to carry him. If you look at his performance at low A, and then kind of extrapolate his peaks, RoboScout has him as a 275 batting average, 360 OBP, 37 home runs, and a 120 WRC plus. So it's basically he's a stud. I remember when he started off strong this year and people were asking, is he a top 100? I'm like, I don't know. I think maybe the back of the top 100. Again, clearly I was a bit too conservative there because he's just crushed. And, you know, the Statcast underlying data is supporting everything he's doing. This is not smoke and mirrors. This is legit.
Yeah. Very much is legit. And I think that, you know, he's a guy that I'm not even sure I fully caught up to how high he should potentially be in that Cardinal system. This is one of the top hitting prospects in the minors, but it's similar to Velasquez, where there's some questions about the defensive capabilities. I think he's got a little bit better chance to catch than Ralphie does, but we shall see how that all plays out. I'm going to pivot here to a guy that isn't ranked by RoboScout just yet, but we shall see. Actually, he was 13th in the low A list. I'm wrong. Dax Kilby of the Yankees, who, you know, I think as I ranked him really, really highly, if you remember, in our FYPD list, I might be able to go even higher. He went 39th in supplemental first round to the Yanks. 308, 400, 410 at the time of recording this. He's got 12 hits already across 39 at bats, 10 runs, just performing. He's hit a ball 108 already. There's power there. There's big athleticism. There's speed. He's one of the more exciting players for FYPD. It wouldn't shock me if he continues to move up. Got to double check where we had him ranked. But what are your thoughts on Kilby? I don't know how much you dug into him. I know you did mention him a little bit in your article.
Yeah, I mean, we had a really small sample Statcast, but since he's playing in the FSL, we have like the full season. So updated, like at the time, his 90th percentile was 108. I think now it's 105.6, which is still great. Like I just said in the Ryniel Rodriguez portion, 18-year-old with a 105.6 90th percentile is excellent. He's not striking out. His contact rate in zone is like 90% or higher. Like he's hitting all the things that you want to hit. I saw a bit of him at the combine, and I really love the sweet swing. My untrained non-scouting eye liked the sweet swing, and now I see the data's supporting my eyes. So I think he's going to be, I could see him creeping into the first round of FYPDs because he's getting a lot of buzz on some other sites too. I saw it today because in the Devil's Rejects League, Brian Slack and I kind of have a team. It's mostly his team, and we grabbed Kilby. And every time someone on Twitter talks about Kilby in a positive way, Slack sends me the sends me the tweet. So I'm up to date on what Dax Kilby's doing right now in his short sample, and so far it's looking pretty good.
Yeah, and we had him 19 right out of the draft in terms of where we had him ranked. So we definitely viewed him as a top 20 player, you know, first round. Obviously that's going to depend upon your league. I think with maybe some of the news of like Chase Laviolette getting injured, you could probably maybe move him down a little bit. But, I think that's the thing with this class is there's a lot of interesting prep names, just kind of across the board. Not all of them have debuted. Some of them are still in, you know, continuation camp and all that sort of stuff. But it'll be interesting a year from now, how many of these guys are, you know, buzzy names, and it's going to be much deeper than just the guys that we ranked in the top 25.
Like last year, that the best stat cat, like the best hitters who made their professional debuts in the small sample per Statcast were Nick Kurtz and Cam Smith, and we know what happened to them. So exactly. Like this might be,
I don't know if we have those this year though. We don't have those in this class.
We don't, but I mean the Dax Kilby's just lighting up my sheet in red right now. Of course it's only 45 plate appearances or whatever it is, but under the underlying, this is the guy who's going to break out the most compared to what we think.
Yeah, I think that's probably the case. It's just, he kind of checks all the boxes of what you're looking for. And, he's handling a tough environment too. I think that's the thing that a lot of people miss sometimes is, you know, just how hard it is to hit in the Florida State League. And I believe they're playing all their games most of the time on like the backfields. They're not playing in Steinbrenner because the Rays are using that park. So it's one of the reasons that you don't get broadcast to their games this year, because it's on the backfields. All right, I want to go on to another name here, a guy that I don't think would be out of control to kind of call out as a potential September call-up, and that's Ryan Clifford of the Mets. He is somebody that RoboScout has long loved. They've long been a Ryan Clifford stan. So talk to me a little bit about Clifford. Why RoboScout likes him so much, and you know, it's pretty solid underlying data as well. And you made a pretty lofty comp in your write-up.
I don't remember who the comp was, but I know he's a 3-2.
You compared him to Samuel Basayo. He's just number two behind Basayo.
Right. Yes. So, yeah, RoboScout has long liked Clifford. If you go back, not last year, but the year before, since I have it right in front of me. His 90th percentile exit velocity was 107 as a 19-year-old, and that was higher than Basayo's 105.9, 1 year younger Basayo is. The contact is solid. He walks a lot. So, you know, he has the power, and he had average contact at the time. Last year, the 90th percentile exit velocity is 105.5. It went back a bit. It slipped a bit. And the contact slipped a bit as well, but it's still 68%, which is basically just under average, but he was hitting for power and hitting home runs. So, you know, when you have the exit velocities like that as a 20-year-old, this is like Bryce Aldridge, Lazaro Montes, Owen Casey, like that type of thing. Xavier Isaacs, but like with better contact, then, you know, that's what you like to see. And then this year, he's at 108.6, his 9th percentile exit velocity, which is higher than Samuel Basayo. His contact has gone up to 73%. So that's average now. That's higher than Samuel Basayo in AAA. He doesn't chase. Basayo has a bit of a chase issue. Maybe not an issue, but he chases more than average. Clifford is basically right on average because, you know, he takes a lot of pitches. But yeah, he's got like 35 home run power, 40 home run power. Clifford does. RoboScout has his peak at like a 355 OBP, 115 WRC plus, 35 home runs. It's just the whole package is there. We had defensive metrics last year. He was above average. So like, he's not that much of a liability at first base. Like, he's probably an okay first baseman. Or if he plays right field or a corner, he'll probably be okay. So yeah, I think Ryan Clifford last year was, I think, a top 10 in RoboScout prospect. Which looked aggressive, but, you know, now looking at him, he's number two in AAA, just behind Basayo, and since he's in AAA, he's right on the cusp of being called up.
Good stuff. All right, let's go to another AAA slugger here as we kind of wrap things up. On a scale of sleep mode to pressure explosion, how excited is the RoboScout about Sal Stewart? He is very divisive in fantasy baseball circles and prospect circles. So what say the RoboScout about old Sal Stewart?
I think I said Clifford was like top 10 last year and per RoboScout. I think Sal Stewart was like number five. I think Michael Arroyo was number two and Sal Stewart was like in the top five, and that was controversial, but he hit all the boxes. He hits the Statcast data. He was hitting all pitches. Like, there were no pitch types that he was struggling against. He had the performance. The only question, which RoboScout doesn't know it during those calculations, is what position he's going to play. So is he second base? May probably not. And then will he hit enough for first base? Don't know. But again, RoboScout looking smart again because he's crushing it. He's in AAA right now. I have him 7th in AAA. Behind some guys named Roman Anthony, Basayo, Clifford, Beavers, Owen Casey, Bryce Eldridge. He has 9 home runs, I guess, at last count. I don't think I updated this for a couple days. In 139 plate appearances, RoboScout sees him as a 25 home run bat, 280 batting average. his Statcast data is great too. His barrel rate is like double plus. His 90th percentile exit velocity is 107, which would play as a first base. Like he has the thump in the bat to play first base. He has a 79% contact rate. He chases that average, but like obviously he's actualizing everything he's doing and he's hitting it at the right angles. So I would say RoboScout's a big fan of Sal Stewart.
All right. So the bolts are flying. You can hear it. He's RoboScout is very excited. Yeah, that's good to hear. I knew that he was a guy that, you know, RoboScout had long been on. And I think it's sort of a case for chasing guys that don't strike out a lot and, you know, walk at a decent clip. He didn't necessarily walk a lot, but the contact skills were always obvious. You know, there is some underlying power there. You know, we obviously have some access to Statcast data, et cetera, that it was never bad. It's kind of hit, you know, a high point at this point. And, you know, he's been playing a lot of second base as well. So there's maybe some opportunity for him to fit in somewhere between like first, second. You know, obviously I don't think he's ever playing third in the big leagues, but has played some third base as well. It's interesting. And I mean, he's, you know, previous career high was 12 home runs in 2023. He's got 20 this year. He's actually up to 10 home runs in AAA, by the way. So had 10 in AA, 10 in AAA. And those 10 home runs in AAA are only over 35 games. So that's really impressive. And that will happen when you go from the Southern League to the International League. So, you know, I'm not fully sold on it's just, it's a tough profile. But the fact that he does play a few different positions and the hit tool is so good with power, that tends to be the type of hitter that has a little, you know, sort of softer landing when it comes to, you know, their first taste of the big leagues. It's also not going to hurt. He could play his home games in Great America Ballpark, exactly. Right? Like, so let's keep all that in mind. I like that one quite a bit. You know what, Dylan? Let's put a pin in it. Let's wrap it up. We got some names that we're keeping undercover. We're not going to share them with you guys. You got to read the RoboScout articles to know who you're going after. I want to thank Dylan for tuning in with me today, recording with me today, coming on, you know, kind of starting over that a little bit. All of our Baseball America subscribers and everybody who tuned in. Catch all y'all next week.
Cheers.